We may think of cyber warfare as a brand new concept, but it turns out it's been on the minds of government officials since some of the very first computers.
In his new book, our next guest looks at the secret and often surprising history of our nation's cybersecurity strategies. Fred Kaplan joins us now. He's the author of the new book, Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. Fred, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks.
Well, we think of cyber war as something that's very new, but in fact it goes back to some of the earliest government computers. What can you tell us about the very early years of cybersecurity?
Right. It actually goes back to the dawn of the Internet itself. There was something called the ARPANET that was about to roll out. That was the precursor to the Internet. And there was one scientist named Willis Ware. He was the head of the computer science department at the RAND Corporation. He was on the scientific advisory board to the National Security Agency. And he wrote a paper. It was secret at the time. It's been declassified since. And he said, look, once you put information on a network, once you have online access from multiple unsecured locations, you are creating inherent vulnerabilities. You're not going to be able to keep secrets anymore. And people read the paper. They thought it was very interesting, and they basically ignored it. And, you know, we are where we are today because of the fact that nobody took action, that whole systems and networks grew up over the subsequent decades that had no provisions for security whatsoever.
When did it first show up on the White House agenda?
Well, it's really one of the most peculiar stories I unearthed. In the first weekend of June 1983, Ronald Reagan was up at Camp David, and, you know, he watched a lot of movies, and that Saturday night he watched War Games. You might remember War Games was the movie with Matthew Broderick mm-hmm. as a teenage whiz kid who unwittingly hacks into the main computer of the North American Air Defense Command, and thinking that he's playing some new game called Global Thermonuclear War, almost sets off World War III. So the following Wednesday, Reagan's back in the White House. There's a big meeting with his national security advisors. It's not about this, it's about something else. But at one point, he puts down his index cards and he says, has anybody seen this movie War Games? Nobody had it. It had just come out. He launches into this lengthy plot description. Everybody's kind of looking around, rolling their eyeballs, wondering what's going on here. And he finally turns to his top general, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says, General, could this something like this really happen? The general says, I'll look into it, Mr. President. Comes back a week later, says, Mr. President, the problem is much worse than you think. This leads to the first presidential directive on computer security, which reads a lot like government documents that you read today telling about how computer systems, which were then just fledgling, are vulnerable to electronic interference by foreign agents, criminals, terrorists. And then, you know, this led to the policies, to the tensions between privacy and security, to rivalries between the National Security Agency and other branches of government that have come down to us to this day, 33 years later.
And it's not a smooth trajectory where the issue surfaces and from then on the top government officials are fully invested in it. It's been sort of fits and starts, hasn't it?
It fits and starts. I mean, it's like a lot of things in government. You know, a new administration comes to power. They kind of dismiss everything that the previous administration has done, and it takes them a while to realize that maybe they had something there. And you know, even in the 80s, it was still a little bit theoretical. We, the United States, were hacking into other countries' systems all over the place, especially the Soviet Union and China. It wasn't really until the 90s, the Clinton administration, that there were signs that other countries had figured out how to do this too. Again, especially Russia and China. And it was around 97, 98 that some major hackings into national security networks began to take place, and that our government started to get at least a little bit serious about doing something about it.
There's some remarkable stories in your book. You tell one about the NSA, certain officials there trying to drum up interest in this new topic, cybersecurity, and actually instigating a fake attack on government networks.
Right. Well, there was the director of the NSA in the late 90s was a three-star Air Force general named Ken Minahan, who'd been aware of this problem for a long time. Nobody was interested in it. So he got permission to conduct a war game where about 25 NSA red team people, sort of elite hackers, would hack into Defense Department networks. Now, it had to go through lawyers, and one condition was that they could use only commercially available equipment. Lawyers weren't going to let the NSA unleash its top secret spy gear on American networks, even in a game. But the long and short of it is that 2 weeks had been laid aside for this game, and within 4 days, they had hacked into everything. In some cases, they just left a little marker, like, you know, Kilroy was here. In some cases, they disrupted email, sent phony email, erased messages, changed plans. And the people looking at what was going on had no idea that anybody was even hacking into their system. They knew that something bizarre was happening, that they didn't trust their communications anymore. They didn't know what was going on. And even if they had known what was going on, at that time there were no protocols, procedures, bureaucracies in place to tell them what to do about it. And it was at that moment, it was a war game called Eligible Receiver that they started to get a little bit serious. They started to put, for example, these little devices called intrusion detection systems on computers. And guess what? The first thing that began to happen, they began to detect intrusions. You can mark sort of 1988 as the time when things really started to step up in a real cyber offense, defense, arms race. But again, kept very secret. We haven't known about this until very, very recently, but within the most inner sanctums of top secret government, this has been going on now for nearly 20 years.
We're talking right now with Fred Kaplan, talking about his new book called Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. And right now, cybersecurity and national security, a big topic right now with the showdown between Apple and the FBI. How do you frame the flashpoints in that debate?
Right. Well, first, it has to be looked at in a certain context. There has been complicity between telecoms and intelligence communities going back nearly a century, dating back to the 1920s when a U.S. intelligence agency persuaded Western Union to give it access to all telegraphs coming in and out of the country. When telephones came along, AT&T allowed the FBI and the NSA to tap phones. In the Internet age, it got to be a two-way street. If you're a software or hardware company and you're wanting to sell your wares to the U.S. government, especially the Defense Department, it has to be vetted. Now, who vets it for security? It's the NSA. They're the ones who know about this. And, for example, the first Microsoft Windows operating system that was sent to the NSA for vetting, the NSA found 1,500 points of vulnerability. And they helped Microsoft patch them. Well, not all of them, most of them. They left a few open so that they could hack into them when foreign governments bought these same systems. So this has been going on. And when the Snowden leaks happened, a lot of companies, you know, were outraged. But I sort of liken this to that scene in Casablanca where Captain Renault says that he's shocked that gambling's going on here while the croupier delivers his winnings for the night. So in that context, what's going on in Apple versus the FBI, it really has almost nothing to do with this particular phone that the FBI wanted to unlock. It really has to do with the FBI wanting to create a legal precedent to strengthen its authorities or to maintain its authorities in a new coming age of much stronger encryption versus Apple, which wanted to disrupt this arrangement and set it on a different path. That's what the case really is about.
And Fred, we've got about 30 seconds left here, but I'm guessing in looking at the history of cyber warfare, you've seen the future too. What should we expect for what the future of cyber warfare might look like?
Well, you know, the guy that I mentioned at the beginning, Willis Ware, one thing that he told some people in the early 80s In fact, it was the screenwriters of War Games who wanted to know if their scenario was plausible. He said, the thing is that the only computer that's completely secure is a computer that no one can use. That's sort of the lesson that's going on here. There really isn't anything that can't be hacked into. And so what a lot of government officials are emphasizing now, I mean, they're still trying to make the locks better, but they're also emphasizing detection. You know, can you make sure you can detect when somebody intrudes very quickly, and resilience. Make sure that you can recover and repair the damage as quickly as possible.
Fred, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Fred Kaplan. His new book is called Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War.